now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Lisa Loader. Today on the show, let's talk about sex, chemsex.
It's becoming quite a big issue in Bristol. We'll be talking to Declan about it and what help you can get if it's affecting you.
And let's hope it gets better.
Ez catches up with Asa about a new short film. All today, right here on Shout Out. Dum-dum-dum. There's no one else who's going to do that, will they? So, apart from Ez in the background there. Hello, we've got a very packed studio tonight, haven't we?
Hi!
Hello!
Hi!
Hello,
hello!
Anyone would think it's sunny out.
Indeed. We didn't quite hear that. Are you all well?
Yes!
We're all good.
Thank you, dear listeners.
I get a flashback from the awards.
We didn't do that anymore, did we?
Yeah, I did, and everyone went and I'm like, no, drag queens don't let
you
get away with that.
I can't hear you.
Yeah. And then they were really loud, and we're like, oh, there are people out there, a couple of hundred, to be fair.
Yes, indeed.
How are you?
Me? What? You're talking to me.
I am talking to you.
Oh,
you don't very often join us on a microphone. It's like,
well, because I can never get a place. Everyone charges into the studio, takes all the places. I'm old and on a Zimmer. Everyone just climbs straight over the top of me and grabs the mic.
Lies, all lies.
I'm loving the look, Lisa. Can we tell the listeners? She's got a bag still on her
she's
shoulder, even
in.
Though she sat on a chair. It looks like you're wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
I'm ready for the show. I'm ready to go. Strapped in.
And we've got someone new on the microphone. Do you want to say hello?
Hello, guys. It's Darren.
Lovely to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, new voice.
I'm hoping to be here regularly, so hopefully you don't hate me.
So, the lovely Terry's here as well. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Yes. So, well, that killed that one. Are you on a mic? Are you on a mic? There we go.
I've been deprived tonight. was it deprived or depraved?
Maybe you didn't run fast enough over people.
Oh dear, it's going to be one of those shows, I think.
You're like on the corner of the desk, aren't you, trying to grab a mic that's if somebody moves away from it.
I don't think we could get away with any more mics. I think there'd just be too much feedback if we had any more in it.
Yeah, it's such a common name, isn't it?
Ba-dum-bum.
The cheesy ones are the best.
So, now, have you got that up on your screen because you've got something to tell us?
Yeah, can I do that now?
Yeah.
Right. Susie Green from Anne Health sent me this. It's come out today. NHS have just released this guidance to primary care about unregulated providers who supply hormone medications to children and young people for gender incongruence. A GP must refuse to support private prescribing or supply of GnRH analogues. A GP should refuse to support an unregulated provider in the prescribing or supply of alternative medications that may be used to suppress pubertal development. A GP should refuse to support an unregulated provider in the prescribing of exogenous hormones.
Well said. I wouldn't have been able to say
a
that.
A GP should always be prepared to refer their patient to an appropriate non-routine investigation under an NHS contract where there is a concern that the child or young person may come to harm as an outcome of medication from unregulated sources. As far as I'm aware, Anne Health is helping people get to Spain, Germany and France, especially Spain, where Spanish doctors prescribe those drugs.
I was going to say, so
it's unregulated. Absolutely,
within the
fine.
EU,
yeah.
It's completely legal. So there's no basis for the NHS or any or our government. They cannot do anything about it because those people are professional doctors, and they're the ones administering it.
That press release—it sounds like it was written for the Daily Mail.
It's streeting.
Is streeting
again?
Yeah.
How many people are going to die?
Well, with suicide, you mean, Tara?
Yes.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? I thought they were going to like do some research into it and clear it all and make it all okay. And
I just don't get that the EU can get it so right and the UK can't.
It's worse than that. There's a document just come out where they're looking for people that detransitioned. They're more interested in detransitioning at the moment than they are transitioning.
Wow.
Yeah, and how many percent is that? So it's 99.9%.
It's about 1%, even less than that.
Yeah. Of those that are. I mean, bearing in mind, like 0.1% of the UK population identify as trans. Yeah. It's so like 100,000 people.
So as an operation, it's 99% successful, and you can't get much better than that from other NHS.
Can you imagine if routine operations were 99% successful?
People would be lining up at the door, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it makes better quality of life, and it allows people to get on societally and actually contribute to the world.
Yeah.
And be happy while doing so.
It's like broadcasting a coffee shop, isn't it?
Amazing. I didn't leave you in the background.
We can just dive in, can't we? Sorry, you got me.
No, well, very important.
No, you carry on, Tara.
It's a subject we'll come back to, I'm sure. But for now, should we find out a little bit about this film?
Yeah,
This is called It Gets Better.
Sometimes films have a profoundly moving impact on us, and when I watched It Gets Better, a short film by Asa Pegler, that's exactly how I felt. So, without further ado, welcome Asa.
Hello, it's lovely to be on here.
It's lovely to have you, and just so the listeners know, we've known one another for a couple of years, but this is the first time that I and others have ever seen a film by you.
It's been amazing, having such positive feedback and stuff, it's been lovely.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Could you tell us sort of a little bit about the film, or as much as you want, and what sort of took you in the direction of writing it, producing it and directing it, which is one heck of an accomplishment, and where your sort of passion from film came from?
So initially I was coming towards the end of my last year at a technical college, and I'd been there for 4 years because I left school with no GCSEs, so I had to work my way up all the way from level one all the way up to level three extended. So that was 4 years, and I thought, I have to go out with a bang. I've came so far, I'm just going to put my heart and soul into a project, really. And I thought, well, I've got a story I want to tell. I want to uplift people in the process of doing that. It Gets Better was then born. I just started writing it, and just it just all came onto the page, and it was cathartic in a way, because some of it is to do with personal struggles I've had, or struggles that I've seen other people go through, and also just the actual attitude towards trans people in Britain as a whole. It all kind of came into one. It was a mix and match of different kind of struggles that I've seen, and societal struggles and stuff. Apologies about my cat in the background. She's very passionate about trans rights and trans film.
I can tell.
I got to work, and I had to do lots of writing and research onto it. I did primary research and asked lots of trans people, how they were treated in society, how they felt, and some of the answers were just so depressing. I mean, it was just like, I know it was quite a small sample size because, I was only a college student at the time, but almost all of them said 100% they had considered not wanting to be here. Lots of them had been assaulted, been abused. Lots of them had hurt themselves. It was really quite a lot. And I thought, I don't want this film to be all doom and gloom, because that's not my story. That's not the end of my story. I mean, it's not the end of my story now, but I didn't want it to be a message of just, it's awful being trans, So I wanted to kind of spin it as these are all the awful things that have happened, but you can get through it and you can get to the end of it and it gets better. You will meet people that will love you and appreciate you. And I feel as though it's done its job in that regard. Absolutely. And how I got into film was just, I was brought up watching all the Star Wars trilogy, all the Indiana Jones, films and TV, just always on in the house, DVDs galore, videos galore. And yeah, I've just always had a passion for telling stories. Yeah.
I think that really came through in the film. And it wasn't until I watched the film that I realised that you'd done all three, written, produced and directed. And I could really see the passion from you poured into it. What was writing it like for you? And can you tell the listeners a bit more about what the film, what the story of the film tells?
It tells us about, I guess, what it's like to live as a young trans person in Cumbria, but you could also apply that to nationwide as well, and even worldwide, really. I mean, trans children are bullied relentlessly online, in person. They're also more susceptible to sexual abuse, which is incredibly unfortunate. Writing it was, you know, quite difficult, but as I've said, quite cathartic as well, because when you get all that kind of trauma that you've been through and put it into art that could uplift people and make people feel less alone, I just kind of was like, it needs to be made just so I can just help people. Because that was the goal, you know, as much as it did help me process some things that I have been through, it also made me realize, you know, and showing it to my tutors as well, like it made me realize like this has potential to make others feel less alone. Absolutely, you know.
Absolutely. And I think the story, because it starts off, doesn't it, with the lead being in their home. Mm-hmm. And just the struggles that they're going through day by day, leaving the house, the bullies meeting them there, mm-hmm. they're just not really being able to breathe because the transphobia and the bullying is just so suffocating and cruel. And then it goes on from there to show that the people that they did trust ended up abusing them. And when you were talking, you know, at the school this is, and when you were talking to me there about not wanting it to be all doom and gloom, it is very hard hitting. But I think it's really important that people, whether they are or are not part of the LGBTQI plus community, really see what young people can experience, both in and out of school, and how it's not just, you know, online, or it's not just in person. It can be 24 hours a day that trans and LGBTQI plus people are going through these really horrific things. And as you were saying, you know, very high risk of self-injurious behavior, very high risk of suicidal thoughts and feelings, and just one of the most vulnerable groups of people in the world. Yeah. But it does have a really powerful ending. So can you tell me and the listeners a little bit more about that?
So the ending, you can interpret it in many ways. You could interpret it as, oh, he ends his life and he's just in purgatory and mm-hmm. he doesn't get out of it. But my meaning that I wanted to get across is, and it comes from my own kind of, I guess, personal instance of this. You know, I did try to end my life at 15. And when I tried to, I actually saw like a white light and stuff like that. And I got the feeling of, I'm not ready yet. I'm not meant to go. And that was kind of reliving that through moving image, you know, that kind of battle with your inner consciousness to stay alive because you have more and you don't know who's telling you that. It could be you. It could be someone else, whatever you believe in, you know, it could be anything, but I wanted to demonstrate that character wanted to fight because there could be more positive days ahead. Because I did. And that's why we have the ending we have, because it's true. I fought, I made it out, and I ended up in a place that was so lovely and warm and caring. And I believe every transgender child deserves that hope, because I think a lot of them, even transgender adults, anyone actually, but specifically trans people, like they deserve hope and they need more media that gives them hope. And that's hopefully what I provided.
Could you tell the listeners a little bit about what the experiences of the actors were like?
I mean, the lead role that was played by Max, he was absolutely incredible. Like, he really resonated with the script. I sent it to him because he was on this website called Backstage, which is where you can get actors and stuff. And I was looking for this role, and not many people had really drifted towards it, but Max really did. And sorry. And he was saying stuff about how much he just really he really related to the character, and he'd do anything to come and play him. So what actually happened, he got a 14-hour coach.
Wow.
all the way up to Cumbria, and he lived in my house for a little bit, and that's how we filmed it. I mean, at one point, I didn't even know he was acting. It was the bit where he was drinking cough syrup. It wasn't actually cough syrup, by the way, but he was drinking it, and I genuinely thought he was like in a lot of trouble, but he wasn't. He was just a really good actor. But he was like, do not stop recording. I was like, are you right? He was like, yes, it's fine. But yeah, it was that. And the other guys, or everybody apart from Max, had no acting experience. And they were all amazing. Like, without their help, this film wouldn't be what it is, you know. So thank you to everybody who's worked on it.
They absolutely were incredible. And it sounds like you were a wonderful group of people all coming together for such sort of important reasons. And again, it really, really came through in the film. I'm glad they had that experience, and I'm glad you found Max and the rest.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure working with all of them. So I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing that about you and your life. And I know that, you know, I'm very glad that you're here and that you had the experience, not the experience of that, but that experience is part of the passion that has been poured into your filmmaking, because it is a very difficult subject for people to talk about, isn't it? And that's something that you obviously want to raise awareness of.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a loud mouth, you know what I mean? And I've spent too much of my time being silent and quiet, you know? And that's why, like, I'm an open book. Like, I'm not ashamed that that's happened to me. If anything, like, what's happened to me has made me a better artist, unfortunately. And fortunately, it's a weird one, that. But also my voice can make other people want to maybe reach out and have a conversation about it, you know? And hopefully it's done that, yeah.
I think it absolutely has. And unbelievably, we're running out of time. We've got a couple of minutes. I know, it's gone by so fast. But what I wanted to say is, firstly, I would love everybody to watch this. So before we bring the interview to an end, and I could talk to you for hours, can you tell people how to watch the film?
Yeah, you can look it up on YouTube. Just type in It Gets Better by Asa Pegler. It should be on there. There is an official Instagram account for it. So if you type in itgetsbetter.film into Instagram, you will also find a link to it there as well.
Amazing. And have you got any other film ideas up your sleeve?
Oh, I do, but none that are fully developed to share to the world yet. But they're all in my head. Don't worry, there'll be more of me.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that. And I'm really excited to see what you make, what you create. And we can have you back on the show to talk about that when it happens, because I know that it will.
That sounds awesome.
Thank you so much, Asa.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Back to the 80s. It is a bit, isn't it?
Wow, we had the glitter ball out for that one. I wish you wouldn't stand on the desk. It's so dangerous.
I've got to show you my glittery shoes. You know.
Really should have seen the shapes Terry was cutting. They were...
Yeah, paper shapes.
Yeah, I was going to say origami.
So that was Andrew Nolan and Got to Pull Myself Together, which I think was a submission into the station, wasn't it? Into the show.
So. Very good as well.
It does. Really, it's nice. Got that kind of 80s nice song, electric feel to
that
it, hasn't it?
To it.
Yeah, synth. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
The synth pop.
The synth.
Yeah, you can tell the 80s music because we discovered electronics.
And then they never let it go.
No. And then the 90s just put a beat behind it and we all clubbed our tits off to it.
Those were the days. Yes.
Lucy's got it. So.
I wasn't old enough to go clubbing in the 90s. I just want to point that out. Oh. It was not. I was. Said with such fond memories that I was so
Lisa
there.
Was there was for so there. There.
She doesn't know if she remembers that she was there, but she was there.
I remember it clearly.
Okay.
Right, should we get some news headlines?
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
We say goodbye and fond adieu this week to one of the network of independent bookstores that has served the city of Bristol. Bloom and Curl pulled down its shutters for the last time last week. The shop, which was a one-man labour of love for Bristol University graduate Jason, opened on Colston Street in 2006. In those days, the parade from the Pineapple all the way up to the hospital was a meandering gay village. A leather bar at the Griffin, a feminist bookstore Greenleaf, fetish store Religion, the club Queen Shilly and their rivals Vibes, the fair trade stores Biashara and Ganesha, the gay lifestyle store Clone Zone, and a pagan shop called Tarot were all available in a likeable queer and bohemian quarter. Bloom and Curl quickly made a name for itself amongst LGBTQIA plus people and allies, along with much passing footfall for the hospital. It held its own over the years, but with time the gay village moved to Old Market and the Colston Street businesses one by one closed or relocated. Today Colston Street is more of a designer boutique end of town. Anyway, we wish Jason all the best for his future endeavours and thank him for his service to the bohemian trading life of the city.
The Erin in the Morning blog reports that another executive order from world economy crashing extremist Donald Trump has been issued, ordering the respected Smithsonian Institute from recognising the achievements of transgender women in any presentation on the subject of women's rights. The order from the president also warned all American museums and history centres that they would be closed if they did anything that he deems un-American. Human Rights Campaign President Kelly Robinson said in a statement that the order was nothing less than fascism at work. Queer history is American history, she said, but instead of focusing on issues that are critical to the American people, the Trump administration is hell-bent on quashing any artistic expression or history that doesn't fit their definition of American. This is what fascism looks like.
Democrats in Georgia's state legislature walked out this week after a slew of anti-transgender laws were instituted by the Republican-dominated House. Around 70 Democrats rallied instead in the lobby and argued that the House was focusing on bizarre minutiae of reforms which are of no relevance for the majority of the people in the US state. For example, the Republicans wanted to declare illegal any trans women being given gender-supported services whilst in prison, something which only affects 5 individuals in the entire state. LGBTQIA plus activists thanked the Democrat majority for its decision to rally against the Republicans, but noted that 3 Democrats were influenced by TERF-style feminism and voted with the far-right Republican measures.
Anti-fascist and anti-far-right network Hope Not Hate, whose support runs from the centre ground to the harder left and unites trade unions, faith groups and policymakers against division, reports that this week is a week of action against a party that has taken up the right-wing ground formerly associated with the right of the Conservatives. A spokesperson said, thousands of people are taking action against Reform UK, leafleting their streets, having conversations in their communities and showing what real hope looks like. The right are putting their full weight into the May elections and many of the polls have them ahead, but that's exactly why we need to act to show that most people want something better. Hope Not Hate are asking people to sign up to election campaigning ahead of local polling, which takes place on Thursday, the 1st of May.
On the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, which aims to hold the internet giants accountable for the tide of hate on their platforms, reports social media are amplifying toxic content created by a network of misogynistic communities known as the Manosphere. In common, these groups promote deep resentment and hatred against women and girls. They've published a number of documents which are free to download and print, including subjects such as what is an incel, what is misogyny against women and girls, and who is Andrew Tate and why do so many teenage boys follow him. To download these useful booklets, visit the Centre for Countering Digital Hate online.
Human Rights Watch says that last week the Trump administration froze federal funding for several organisations across the country that provide life-saving cervical cancer screenings, contraception, family planning and other healthcare services to low-income people. The Title 10 Family Planning Programme provided services to more than 2.8 million people in 2023, and now the programme's future is unclear.
Now, we always advocate for community radio on Shoutout. Many LGBTQIA plus radio shows and entire queer radio stations have flourished worldwide since the rise of community radio in anti-fascist campaigns of Italy and Spain during the 70s. In Australia in the 70s, the early campaigns also met with great success, whereas both Labour and Tory governments in Britain tried to close down community radio stations that were operating without licences. Under Gough Whitlam's government in Canberra, community radio was legalised in 1974. Australian community channels today remain more radical than British counterparts and are permitted to agitate much more for funding and put on air more radical voices. In Melbourne, the station 3CR on 855 medium wave says that they plan to celebrate International Workers' Day, which is coming up, with coverage of workers' struggles, union work towards better wages and conditions, and the fight for democratic rights to organise and unionise. On Thursday the 1st of May, many of their favourite Thursday programmes will have a May Day theme, plus the infamous Talk Back with Attitude all-nighter will go on. Followed on Sunday the 4th of May, a union programme with presenters live from the marquee outside the Trades Hall in Carlton, Melbourne, with a two-hour broadcast for this May Day event and rally. If you can't get down to the rally, be sure to listen in. 3CR is available online internationally as well as on the air in Melbourne, Australia.
International campaign network All Out is reporting on the 28th of March 2025 earthquake that struck in Myanmar, which has claimed over 3,500 lives so far. And on top of that, there are thousands suffering critical injuries and left without homes, all in the midst of the ongoing civil war and humanitarian crisis, with hundreds of people still missing. Whenever large-scale natural disasters strike, communities that were already vulnerable suffer the greatest. One organisation, Colours Rainbow Inc., is working to deliver life-saving aid to LGBT plus people in need across the areas hardest hit by the earthquake. In Myanmar, same-sex relationships are punishable by up to 20 years in prison, meaning oftentimes LGBT plus people are forced to hide from the public or live on the streets, often being victims of harassment, public shaming and police violence. Colours Rainbow is in contact with over 500 LGBT plus people who need emergency support to survive. They are well connected and ready to get the work underway, but they do need the funds to do it. Donations to this worthwhile international relief cause can be made via All Out Online. Just search for All Out International LGBTQIA Relief or allout.org.
And finally, some good news from LGBTQ Nation website. They say, announcing a transformative investment in the future of black trans women, a coalition of community groups have opened the T.S. Madison Starter House, a new re-entry home for formerly incarcerated black trans women in Atlanta, that's in Georgia. The innovative project is a collaboration between black and trans performer and producer Madison, an Atlanta-based non-profit and one of the oldest black-led HIV/AIDS service organisations in the South, and a New Way of Life's Safe Housing Network, which is a national collective providing safe re-entry housing for people that have been in prison. It's the first of its kind programme in the South and provides residents with psychological support, health and wellness care, and workshops centred on business plan management and project management. Black trans Americans face an unemployment rate four times higher than average and a poverty rate which is three times higher than white trans people, according to a 2015 US transgender survey. Nassim, which is one of the backers of the project, said, "We envision a world where black trans women are not just surviving, but thriving. The T.S. Madison Starter House is a blueprint for a future where community-led solutions can withstand any political climate, any discrimination, and any effort to erase us."
The news continues unabated from Shoutout. Why not check us out online? And also keep connected with community radio and podcasts through the week. We shall see you next weekend.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
And Lucy Potter.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
You're right, that's very dramatic, that
it
one,
was
isn't
very,
it?
Honestly. I thought I was about to start running. I didn't know where to, but
I've never heard that. Who's that by?
That's by Tommy Proffitt and Nicole Serrano. It's obviously called Cry Me a River. It's a remake of a very well-known song.
Yeah, I think his name's Timberlake.
Yes, you're right. Yes, yes. Thank you. Sorry,
Justino Timberlake.
I looked, like, no, it's Tommy Prophet in the Cold Serrano. I just said that.
It's Justin seeing Cry Me River.
Justin Bieber?
No. Justin Timberlake. Yeah, different Justin. The earlier Justin.
No, I have a funny feeling I Shazammed that when Traitors was on. And that's why that's so dramatic.
You know that's very Traitors.
Yeah, it is very Traitors,
isn't
it? I've never seen it, but yes.
Have you seen the Netflix one called A Millionaire?
No.
So we just binge watched that. It's such a rip-off of Traitors.
Okay.
Really is
it American?
It is, yes.
Okay.
But it's got a British host who is overly British, because you know the way the Americans love that.
Who's the host, do you know?
So, I do know. I knew you were going to ask me that. I can't remember.
Do they have a really crazy fringe as well, or they can't see what they're doing?
If they don't, I'm not watching.
No, they look like a butler in the show. It's that kind of thing.
Okay.
Anyway, a million miles away from what we're about to talk
yes,
about,
indeed.
Isn't it? So, a very warm welcome to the show to Declan. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you come in to talk to us about quite a serious subject, haven't you?
Yes. Excuse my voice, listeners. I do sound like I should be after hours, but this is what you've
got. We gave you an extra week as well. Because you had this last week, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
were you worse last week?
I was absolutely 100% worse last week. Like, I was mute. Couldn't hear me at all.
So, well, at least you got some of your voice back.
Yes.
But yeah, you come to talk to us about the subject of chem sex.
That's right, yeah.
So, age-old question first off. There will be listeners listening, because even some of our crew turned around and went, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
So for those that are listening, can you explain what chemsex is?
Absolutely, yeah, sure. So in layman's terms, chemsex can be described as anybody who has a sexual experience whilst using drugs or under the influence of drugs.
Right.
It's predominantly rife within the gay communities, you know. There's an epidemic in London, you know, and Bristol is quickly becoming of that epidemic standard. Yeah, it's becoming a real problem. You know, we've got people dying. We've got, you know, that shouldn't be dying, not by intentional suicide or anything like that. But, you know, so it's...
Well, I suppose we ought to start off with what we class as the chem bit.
Yes.
Because technically things like alcohol is a drug.
Mm. Yes.
And I'm sure quite a few people have had a couple of drinks and gone home to their partner. We wouldn't class that as chem.
Not at all, no.
So where is the line?
Yeah, so... Because we've normalised alcohol, it's become normal within society. So when I talk about chemsex, the substances that are mainly used are things like crystal meth, methamphetamine, Tina, ice, whatever you want to call it. GHB is another one. It's also a date rape drug, like Rohypnol was used in the early 2000s. Mm. Ketamine is another big one. MCAT is another big one. Cocaine. All at speed. You know?
All illegal.
All illegal illicit substances, yes. And then we've got things like people are using things like Valium as well to help them calm down after, you know, 4-day sessions and stuff like that, which is something you really shouldn't do because of the contraindications it can have. But yeah, so chemsex I would describe as, you know, all of the illegal illicit substances ranging from meth downwards.
Right. I mean, I'll ask you the negatives in a minute, but people obviously do this for a reason.
Absolutely.
What entices them to want to do it in the first place? Is it because of the euphoria, or is it are there other reasons that would make you want to do this?
Absolutely. So I just want to caveat what I'm about to say by saying that I'm not a therapist. I'm not a licensed professional. This is from personal experience. But I think as gay men, we already have a lot of trauma anyway. You know, whether that's comparison, we compare our lives, our bodies, our finances, our careers to other gay men. But then, you know, we can be segregated by our own communities as well. So if you go onto Grindr, you'll see profiles that say no old guys, no guys over 30, no fat guys, no black guys, no young guys, you know. So we're chipping away at each other's souls. So there's no wonder we've got men that are turning to drugs because they just don't know where to go or who they are or what community they belong to.
Well, funnily enough, last week on the show, ironically, just in a conversation we were having on air, the conversation came up about the days I remember you walked into a bar or
Absolutely.
A nightclub, and I mean, we don't have magazines so much these days, but they used to be full of guys all muscly, smooth, and even as an 18-year-old, I remember feeling that pressure going, oh my God, I don't look anything like that.
Yeah.
Should I be looking like that?
Yeah.
You know,
comparison will always be the thief of joy, always. Mm. And I think, you know, as a starting point, I think as a community, we need to get better at being kinder to each other. You know, we really do need to, the buck stops with us, you know. We are our own problem when it comes to that. And chemsex is emphasized by those insecurities that we develop within each other. You know, so I think if we can all become a little bit kinder to each other and, you know, and be the community that we so desperately outwardly express to be, then I think that's a really good positive starting point.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, something we were talking about off air, but it is, you know, the marginalised within the marginalised.
Absolutely, yeah.
And also neurodiversity and trauma and all these different things come together.
Yep.
For people who already feel on the outside looking in and growing up feeling different and then being treated as different by the community they're trying to be a part of.
Yep.
Is just incredibly traumatising and distressing.
It is,
and yeah. I can understand, you know, with what you're talking about right now, you know, and I really hope this helps listeners to understand that, you know, we understand, you know, why people are brought into this sort yeah. of space where they think that using drugs is a way to help them be with other people, be in a space. And it sounds like that's what your experience may have been or what you're seeing with other people's experiences.
Absolutely, yeah. You've hit the nail on the head there as well. And I think for me personally, it was all about finding a sense of community, a sense of belonging, because I so desperately wanted to be a part of something. And it just so happened that unfortunately I fell into that scene and I was a part of that scene for 5 years.
So is it self-perpetuating then? Is it because you get that, you've... That escapism and the like from it, it pushes you to want to do it.
Absolutely. It becomes your identity. It became my identity.
I mean, just correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the drugs are also quite addictive themselves
yes.
as yeah. well, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that sounds like it's a twofold thing coming at you. You've got one from the addiction of the drugs and the other from the own addiction to that kind of escapism.
Absolutely, yeah. So you've got the escapism, you've got the kind of lack of self-worth, lack of self-identity, you don't know who you are or where you belong. All of that coupled with, you know, I've got ADHD as well, so that coupled with addiction. You know, I was a cocaine addict from 2006, so cocaine has been the biggest addiction in my life, and I fell into crystal meth, quote unquote, in 2019. But my first chemsex experience was in 2014 when I was 24. And that was with MCAT and a couple of guys from Bristol in my local area where I lived at the time. So it's always been a part of our society, but it's just never been, a spotlight has never been shone no. on it in the way in which that I want to shine that spotlight.
Because, I mean, I remember it when I was 18, that was yeah, 1996.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's been around for a long time, but I, yeah. probably because I'm like in my mid-40s, I'm going to say.
You don't look a day over 21.
it's not something I'm exposed to enough to know it's as big yes. as it is, but from what you say, it's absolutely huge. So I guess the big question is, well, then what's wrong with it? What happens? Okay, it's addictive, but what makes it so wrong that...
It's the you know, the nuts and bolts of it is people are dying. People are dying through no fault of their own or no want of their own. We've got guys that are showing predatory behaviour in sessions that are purposefully overdosing or G-ing out other men. Some of these guys are no older than 18, right? Nice. Yeah, so we've got, you know, and this is the other thing as well about segregation. You know, we've got guys that are retired that have lost their sense of identity and don't know what to do. So they fell into this using drugs in this chemsex scene. And because they have power when it comes to dishing drugs out, you know, their behavior changes very rapidly. And you start to see these predatory kind of behavioral traits or that I've witnessed in sessions as well. So,
and what about the effect on you as an individual? I mean, you're someone who's actually been through it.
Yeah,
it can't do you any good to continuously keep doing these drugs.
Not at all. And it's not just the mental health element of it. I mean, crystal meth is the most potent amphetamine one could possibly take. I smoked it via a bong. People inject it, you know, in saline water and inject it straight into their arms, and that's called slamming, for those of you that don't know or want to know. But no, not only did your mental health get absolutely ruined, it also has detrimental effects on your physical health as well. So for me personally, I've suffered terribly. Now I'm in recovery. I've been in recovery 3 months this coming Monday.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. And I've had terrible stomach issues because I'd keep myself awake for 4 or 5 days at a time by not eating anything, barely drinking any liquid, and just plowing crystal meth into my system. You know, so your body literally has to relearn how to digest food.
Yeah.
You know, so nobody talks about that. You know, my esophagus had to, the muscles in my esophagus had to learn how to swallow again. You know, because nothing was going down it. And I now have chronic heartburn, as we were discussing off air.
Wow.
Right, with Renee.
With Renee. And, Le Gavasson.
Le Gavasson. But it's those sorts of physical things that nobody talks about, because unless you're willing to talk about it like I am, you know, it's important to raise this awareness. And like I said at the beginning, you know, it has absolute detrimental effects on your physical health. There are statistics out there that say it takes your brain up to 2 years to recover or repair its neurological pathways after you stop using crystal meth. 2 years.
And also, I suppose it's not just the reparative side of things. It's the fact that you're trying to adjust to literally living minute by minute,
100%.
Not using, not yeah. focusing on using, not focusing on where to buy something to get you through, yeah. Not focusing on, well, not having something that is your social life is focused on, changing your entire perspective. That takes a huge amount of work.
Yeah.
And it sounds both rewarding and quite exhausting.
It is. It's all of that. It's painful. It's messy. You know, healing and, you know, recovery isn't linear. It's a day-by-day thing. And I think for me, the way I've done it is I've removed myself from those toxic quote-unquote environments. You know, I've deleted the numbers of people, I've cut ties with the people who I've outgrown as an individual. I cannot continue to grow if I'm still acquainted with people who were offering me bongs, you know, or lines of MCAT or whatever. So
and
I
that
think,
can't be easy, because I'm guessing some of these were also friends.
No, I don't see. I've always been able to kind of compartmentalize it in my head. So I would always say, when I was in sessions, I would always say, in my real life, I'm nothing like this. So the way I kind of dealt with it, my coping mechanism of being, you know, an active addiction, was by creating a false reality. But I've never been friends with anybody on that scene. They've all been acquaintances or people that I know, because friends don't do that to each other.
Yeah.
You know, true friends don't do that. You might get friendly with
you
people.
Had mutual users.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
mutual users, and you enable one another. You know, you instigate one another, you enable one another, and it becomes this vicious, habitual, toxic cycle.
How is it for you now, sort of 3 months on, looking from the outside in to what you went through? Because I can hear how passionate you are about what you want to do to help other people step into that space of recovery, and to recognise that it is possible and that it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm living proof. I would always say, God, this is who I am now. I have to live with the fact that this is who I am. I'm going to die via an overdose. You know, I didn't want to, but I was prepared to. But now I'm in full recovery, and I've completely abstained from drugs. I've completely abstained from sex. You know, I've completely took myself away to do that inner work, to look at myself, to dig up those voids that drugs were filling and deal with them in the most raw emotional states. And that takes courage, and not a lot of people are brave enough to do that, and that's completely understandable.
Yeah.
But
it's very frightening, isn't it, when you've been in something for so long, to know there's something else on the other side, but not quite know what to step into to get there.
Yeah, and like we were talking off air, as we're like, I've done recovery programs before, and, you know, 12-step programs and stuff, and they just didn't work for me, because those sorts of spaces to a very fragile gay man are quite intimidating. And the expectation that some of those programs force upon you are quite strong, and, you know, you get held accountable for your own sobriety, but then if you relapse, you know, it's
absolutely. And you know, something that I've always been reflective of about those sort of supportive spaces is that actually the queer spaces within those groups, from my understanding, are far more supportive, and they are accessible 24 hours a day. That is something that's special now about Zoom, and having that ability that you can talk to somebody, you can be in a space 24/7. But if it doesn't feel right for you, there's always another space, there's always somebody else, there's always another number. And it sounds like what you're really passionate about is like building an awareness that there is always going to be a community. When you've been ostracized for so long throughout your entire life, whether it's the fact that you're queer, neurodiverse, or both, you know, the first thing that people need to believe is that there will always be a space where you can feel loved and held.
I think that's you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, growing up queer, you know, is so detrimental. It can be detrimental to your own, you know, physical and mental well-being, because you don't know where to go or what to do or who to turn to for support. Throw ADHD into the mix, and then addiction, substances, etc., etc. you're screwed, you know, in every way.
You're so isolated.
You're isolated.
What are you without your addiction?
Like I said at the beginning, it became my identity because that's who I believed I was. And then it becomes, you program it into your system as a belief. Mm-hmm. It's not a thought, it's not a feeling, it's a belief. And the psychology behind that is so complex to understand when you're in the thick of it. It's not when you kind of come out of it and you think, my God, I believed I was that person, but I'm so much more. You know, I'm so much more. And, you know, I'm passionate about, you know, not just chemsex, but people recovering in general in spaces that are fit for them, you know. And, you know, I've set up, I'm in the process of setting up Join the Recovery. The aim for that is to be a social enterprise, to offer really safe spaces for queer people, you know, or you know, people of any background, really, who struggle with mental health, addictions, neurodiverse illnesses, you know, whatever you recover or want to recover, quote unquote, from. It's just that building of community, you know, that building of that space, that safe space, you know, that comfort blanket that needs to be created.
That was beautifully put, and it just made me think that you can sit on a chair and not take up a space but be held in one.
100%.
You know, it's so important, isn't it, that people know that when they felt so alone, there will always be a space at somebody's table.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're neurodiverse, neuroqueer, and or, you know, in or out or in recovery from addiction, it is such a lot to feel like you're holding by yourself. And to have one person, it's never just one though, is it?
No, not
at all. There's millions of people.
100%. And I want to stress this, and I cannot stress this enough, you are not alone. You know, you're really not alone in anything that you want to do, and you don't have to be defined by your chemsex usage or, you know, what you get up to in these group sessions and stuff. That doesn't define your worth as an individual. You are worth so much more than that. I'm a living embodiment of
absolutely
people can take themselves out of that environment, because I will challenge anybody to say that they have fun.
And of course, to those that might be thinking about it in the first place, I'm guessing,
don't do it. Don't get involved. We all have free will, we all have choices, you know, we all, you know, that's part of the human experience. But from somebody who's battled an 18-year coke addiction, in the last 5 years I've battled a meth addiction, don't do it, because you will gain nothing and you will lose everything.
I would just say, as someone who may be listening now, thinking, hearing your story and just thinking, okay, so where did he start? When was the moment when you made the first step, and what was that?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. So it got to the end of last year, just after New Year's Eve, and I felt myself, I was smoking that much meth. I was on day 5 of no sleep. So I've got sleep, you know, delirium. I've got, you know, no food in my system, barely any liquid, you know, off my face on crystal meth on another universe. And I couldn't hold focus. I felt myself becoming erratic, and I felt myself going mad. Yeah. And it was this sense of self from somewhere that said, you've got two options. You choose life or you die. Mm. And I woke up the next morning and I felt really sad that chapter of I chose to end that chapter of my life.
Yeah.
Sad for grieving that past, but also really looking forward to what the future holds. And I'm really living day by day. I have no idea what I'm going to do tomorrow, right? I think
it's that first step, isn't it?
That hardest part is taking that first step, because there will always be people to support you.
Yeah,
you
absolutely
just need to reach out.
Absolutely.
You can tell just talking to you how passionate you are about it. And I have to say, I mean, I've seen other friends go through it too. I know how difficult it is. You know, you really have to try to pull yourself out of it. But like you say, you're the living embodiment of the fact you can. So, I mean, to anyone that is, get help.
I mean, you know, I've got a website, www.jointherecovery.co.uk. feel free to message me, talk to somebody who's got that lived experience, because that in itself is a first step. You know, it's so it, for me personally,
saying it out loud.
Saying it out loud. And you know, it's just, you know, you've got to want to do it.
Absolutely.
You know.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking
to
you.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
We've overrun so much, we're almost out of show. That's how serious a subject it was. It's been lovely to talk to you about
it.
What you'll have to do is make sure you stay in contact with us, because if you manage to get the enterprise off the ground, it'd be lovely to catch up with you in
100%.
6 months and see how it's going. But keep at it and stay on the straight and narrow, because it's lovely to see you through it and out the other side.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you'll get your voice back in a week.
I hope so. It's really annoying me now.
You sound thanks, great.
So, yeah, so... Yes, what an interesting subject. Do reach out. If anything that you've heard in the show is triggering alarm bells or making you worry, like Declan said, there is loads and loads of people out there who can help you in various different ways. Yeah. There's lots listed on our website, and there's lots if you have a Google. And like Declan said, you reach out and... have a chat with him. I don't know if you drink coffee. I'm sure you could.
I don't. I drink hot chocolate.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yes. Full fat coke. Yes.
Love it.
Full fat wonderful. Coke. I love that. We all have to have another vice.
100%.
Right?
Mine right now is sugar.
Well, oh, I mean, that's better than meth.
I think so. Yeah.
I think so.
You swapped out a Coke for a better Coke.
That's right.
That's what we like to
I've swapped the white stuff for the brown stuff.
Yeah.
I hope you flushed.
I don't quite know what to make of that.
Well, sugar is sweeter.
Anyway, that's it for this week. Remember, if chemsex is affecting you, like we said, there is help out there. Check out this show on our website. We'll make sure we put loads of links to information for you.
Yes, shoutoutradio.lgbt is our home online, where you can also find out more about us and grab our podcasts.
Next week, we're talking to Daddy Spencer.
We are indeed.
But for myself and the rest of the team, there's far too many for me to name you all. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.